First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the show. My name is Bill Simmons. We're coming off a two-week sabbatical from the podcast. Now we're back every week for the rest of 2007. We have a new name. We have a new theme song. We have some good stuff planned for the next few months. It's going to be fun. Right now I'm very distracted. First of all, I'm hungover from last night because we filmed the ESPYs last night, and there are a couple post-ESPYs parties that were really surreal, like just strange to see recognizable athletes drinking, working it with ladies, seeing Maria Sharapova in 4-inch high heels, seeing Paris Hilton dancing around a bar after she claimed she was a changed woman. It was crazy. And the bottom line is I'm just old and I just can't go out for that long anymore. I feel it the next day. I feel like I'm 57 years old today. The other reason I'm distracted is because, every Thursday, before the Thursday games start, we have a trade deadline for my league, and you can't trade for that week until the next week. So because it was All-Star break, we have a bunch of trades flying around and rumors and offers. I'm taking phone calls. Yesterday I was stepping out of the ESPYs to take calls. It's really insane, and I have no defense whatsoever for the fantasy baseball thing, but you have people who are at work allegedly doing their jobs, frantically emailing each other, trying to top offers. There's really nothing like it, and I can't defend that either. So anyway, I'm distracted, and I'm going to be glancing at my BlackBerry during this entire podcast because I'm trying to get Andrew Miller of the Tigers from one of the guys who's competing, and we're going to see if that works out. Maybe I'll update you as the podcast goes along. Let's get to this week's guest. He's the host and executive producer, Jimmy Kimmel Live. He's hosting the ESPYs with the global icon, LeBron James, on Sunday night. And he's the man responsible for breaking my mother's heart when he convinced me to move to California. Jimmy Kimmel, welcome to the show.
I'm sorry to your mother. And, I always forget I'm the executive producer until somebody mentions it like that.
I thought it sounded more professional if I threw that in.
It does. It makes me seem like I'm really doing something here.
Last night was your first chance to host a completely contrived award show. How did it go?
No, I've hosted completely contrived award shows before.
Which ones?
Well, there's the American Music Award.
Oh, that's a legitimate show.
How's it? I don't understand what makes one show legitimate and what makes another one not. I mean, like would you consider the Golden Globes a legitimate show?
Well, that's an excuse for people to drink.
But we know, though, that the reality is that there are a bunch of, foreigners, people, you know, like some Swedish guy who is a bike messenger, voting on this thing, and that their opinions really are, who cares, you know?
Yeah. Well,
but at least this one, at least there's some, with acting, it's like, it's weird that it's at least with this one, there's some sort of physical achievement there.
Yeah, and I like how some of the awards also could be double as the awards in the porn awards.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you got best male, best female.
It is weird that they, because it makes it sound like they're talking about horses or something.
It's
like best male, and I think I corrected it accidentally last night when I mentioned it's a best male athlete, but best male, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, and then they have best international male, and you think like Rocco Siffredi is going to be one of the nominees.
Yeah.
My personal highlight after the show. LeBron and Maria Sharapova were standing outside of LeBron's dressing room, and LeBron has always had a thing for Sharapova. He's talked about it. So he convinces her to take a picture, and they're standing there posing, and LeBron's buddy couldn't figure out how to use the camera.
Uh-huh.
And they're just standing there awkwardly for like a minute. And it was just like real life, only it wasn't anything close to real life.
Only taller?
Maybe
LeBron's smarter than you think, and maybe that was a scheme by his buddy so he could sit there with his arm around Sharapova for a longer time.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of that. What was your favorite backstage moment?
My favorite was LeBron and I were on stage. We're in the wings kind of at the during the last moments of the show, and people were dancing around. These dancers were dancing around the audience, And I bump LeBron. I'm like, check out Vince Young. And he starts cracking up because he was watching him too. Vince Young was like, was checking out every dancer as she danced by, you know. And,
yeah.
And he seemed to be there with a girl down the top of it. But he was like trying not to be obvious, but it was very, very obvious. And of the 3,500 people in the audience, both LeBron and I zeroed in on him.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those athletes were in heat last night. You could see it.
Yeah, well, who can blame them, you know?
No. I certainly can't. You know what else was interesting? And unfortunately I can't share the names here, but finding out the inside gossip about which feuding athletes wouldn't sit near each other in the audience. How like certain people had to be on opposite sides.
I know. Can we not say who they were, who that is?
Why don't you say it so I don't get in trouble?
Okay. Well, the story, you never know with these things. If they're true, the story is that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't like Peyton Manning. Doesn't like Matt Leinart or
right.
Vice versa.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Maybe there's something Peyton Manning and Matt Leinart don't like each other.
Yeah, it seems like nobody liked Matt Leinart except you.
I guess not. I like him.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I'd never met Peyton Manning before, but he's a very nice guy.
I know. And, I want to follow up on that, but give us more names so I won't get in trouble. You have to do it.
I don't remember any of the other ones. What else was there? Give me a hint and I'll say
tennis
it.
Players, female.
Female. Oh, Sharapova and somebody else?
Yeah, and Serena.
Oh, yeah, and Serena.
Yeah, they had to be on opposite sides of sides
of
the.
Makes sense, though, because, I guess it makes sense for the quarterbacks, too, but, they're opponents, and tennis players never really seem to have much love for each other in general.
Yeah, they're like natural enemies in the wild.
Yeah,
it's a very individual
that was interesting.
Sport.
The whole all the politics of who sits where, and I actually invited Mike Tyson to the show, and they stuck him in the second balcony, which couldn't really have been a terrible mistake for everyone. But I think he moved closer to the front as the show went on, so I was relieved.
Well, I thought that he actually wanted to be out of the limelight.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'd like to just hear him say the word limelight.
I don't think he's capable at this point.
I want to be out of the limelight.
you shot a tape piece with him that's really funny for the show on Sunday, and we got to spend a few hours with him. Where do you see his life heading in the next 5-6 years?
I don't know. I hope it goes well for him. I really do. I know he's taking his rehab very, very seriously. I mean, very seriously. And he seems to be in a pretty good frame of mind right now, although it did seem like a little bit depressed to me, but I don't know what he will do next, but I do think he's a guy who's probably been abused in various ways throughout his life by these managers and
right.
people taking advantage of him financially and mentally, and I like him. I feel sorry for him. I really do.
Yeah, I would have used the word saddening. There's
yeah.
something sad about watching him. First of all, it seems like he's on a lot of medication, like whether it's antidepressants or whatever, and he just kind of seemed a step slow and just kind of beat down. Yeah, sluggish. And and he's also heavier than he used to be. Like anybody who thinks Mike Tyson is fighting anytime soon, do not wager on that bet because I don't see him coming back anytime soon. But it is I was thinking about him last night when he went in your dressing room and how this guy was like, the biggest guy. About in 1988, 1989, Jordan hadn't quite hit the stratosphere yet. I think Jordan was the biggest athlete. Tyson was the biggest athlete in sports.
Well, it's an interesting thing because for most athletes, he had the rape conviction, and obviously there was that tainted him in the public eye, and then it seemed like he kind of like came back and people were interested in him again, but now it's strange. I mean, he does not get the same kind of respect, or I don't know what word you want to use exactly, but he doesn't seem like he gets the same thing that other athletes who accomplished as much as he did or as popular as he was. And I really don't, it's weird because it would make sense if it was because of the arrest, but it doesn't seem like that's the reason. It just seems like people like, if you're not crazy, we're not interested in you, really. If you're going to spin out, we're interested. If you're going to be healthy, then we're not.
The other interesting thing about him was that he always seemed to have like a weird sense of what his place was, that people saw him as the crazy boxer who did crazy things. And I think in his head, he didn't quite feel that he was that way, but he was pigeonholed as that guy. And he kind of just became that guy.
Yeah, or he almost said like, fine, if that's what you're going to think of me, that then I don't care. But he's smarter than,
yes,
than people would guess, I think. And he's got a pretty good sense of humor, and he really, I mean, I've seen him in some surprising situations where he's genuinely nice to people that he knows and doesn't know.
Yeah, well, you know, when he co-hosted your show, I was still working there. And it was really one of the most memorable weeks of my life. Like it was.
Yeah, mine too. It was really, especially that first night. I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
I had no idea if he was going to think it was funny or he's going to get mad. And you know, just flashing through my head was: is this a guy who bit someone's ear off? Not just once. I mean, it wasn't just like there was a sudden snap and he bit the ear. He went for the second ear.
Yep.
He's hungry. I mean, when you go for the second ear, that's a major move. The second time.
I think he wanted to escalate it. I think the first ear, I think, wasn't a strong enough statement for him.
I just thank God Evander Holyfield doesn't have more ears. Who knows where it would have led.
Tell the Alan Landry story from when he co-hosted.
It's not really a story as much as it was like, it's like being in the middle of a dream where, I mean, Alan Landry came on the show and she was just, I mean, she's just ridiculously hot. I mean, not that she doesn't look hot in TV or magazine, but in real life, I mean, it just makes you want to strangle Mario Lopez to death. I mean, but you could cheat on her. I don't know why. Anyway, but she comes on, and he was fired up. I mean, he got a look at her, and, I mean, you know, he just was fired up, and he could barely contain himself. And
yeah.
I started to get worried that he was, I don't know, that he was going to grab her and we were going to have the first televised rape. I didn't know what was going to happen. And I remember looking around my desk and thinking, if I have to stop this, how am I going to handle this? I mean, my security team is a 73-year-old man and, you know, some like a 112-pound illegal immigrant. See, now I'm not going to get any help from them. And I remember looking at the phone. I had one of those big, heavy, old-time phones on my desk and thinking, oh, I'll pick this up and hit him on the head.
And well, he's pawing at her.
Him for just long enough that we can get away.
He was pawing at her, remember?
Yeah, I mean,
it was almost like watching a giant dog pawing at like a piece of beef or something.
It was like of mice and men.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
a weird one, yeah, definitely.
And then my other big memory from that week was just being on the roof in Harlem with your Uncle Frank and him as Tyson showing us how to fly pigeons.
Yeah, that was
it was amazing.
That piece I was transfixed by it. I mean,
yeah.
it was definitely a different side of Mike Tyson.
It was transfixing to be there and scary because there was a roof involved. You know, in a 5-story drop to anybody's death, and you had Tyson who nobody really knew what kind of
state
of mind
he was. Yeah, nobody met him. That was the first time you guys met him. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great piece. We should put that up on YouTube or something.
Yeah, we should, actually. I would like that. You know what else was interesting about last night's show? We all went out to dinner after, and LeBron was at the same restaurant, and you actually had a bigger entourage than LeBron. Is there a white entertainer with a bigger posse than you?
It's ridiculous. It really is. We had my parents were there, and my brother, my cousin Sal, and his wife, and you and your wife, and just a lot of people. And then it got bigger as we went to the party because people we didn't know decided to join in, and I didn't have the heart at the door, even though they're like, "Who do you know and who don't you know?" You know, and then I have to be the one that stands there and goes, all right, this guy doesn't get in, this guy does get in, you know.
Yeah.
It was a horrible position for me. I really wanted to go right home.
Yeah, that's like your worst nightmare. But, well, the other thing is we had Carson Daly's new agent was there, and everybody was excited about
that. That's right,
too.
James Baby Doll Dixon.
Yeah.
That's right. Carson was with us, and, oh, that's a long inside story, but it was
funny.
Yeah,
that sure is. Well, getting back to Peyton Manning. You know what? I hate working these award shows because – you have in your mind, you have people that you like and you don't want to meet because you don't want to find out they're a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then you have people that you don't want to like because it's more fun not to like them. And when you meet them, they're a good guy. And for me, you know, Peyton Manning, I hate the Colts, always root against him, always say he doesn't come through in the clutch. And then to meet him and see what a gracious guy he was, he's taking pictures with everybody. He's just
he's like funny and you know, engaging. Yeah, he was much, much, much friendlier than I would have guessed.
Yeah, and actually more charismatic than I would have guessed.
Yeah, his wife was nice too.
I'm very mad that I met him, and I'm going to have it somehow digitally erased from my brain, the entire experience.
Well, maybe if they put you in the show Heroes, you can have that Haitian guy take your memory out. It'll be fine.
Who, out of the people you've met, who were people, who's like the person that you wanted to not like, but you ended up liking, and vice versa, the person you thought you would love and you didn't like?
You mean of everyone or of the athletes?
Just in general, celebrities, because you've been doing your show for 4.5 years.
Interesting. People that... I don't know, you might be able to help me more than you may remember this stuff better than I do, but I wouldn't say, you know, there are people that I'm surprised by pleasantly, like, sometimes, like, if there's a serious actress on the show and you go, like, wow, oh, you know what? I mean, not that this is a person I didn't think I would like, but Cameron Diaz is, like, so over the top, like, nice and game and, like, to, you know, do it, you know, everything we wanted her to do, she did. She came a few hours early before the show to play Touch the Head against me. And
right.
She really, like, I mean, it was just like, wow, this is unbelievable, you know.
Well, and you've been in a different place because in the first year of the show, it wasn't doing that well. Now it's doing pretty well. And the celebrities, I remember... There was a time when we were scrambling for guests and all that. You must feel a lot more comfortable about how things are going now, right?
Yeah, well, I feel definitely. I mean, a lot of it's just time and, you know, people coming on the show and having good experience and then wanting to come back. And you know, the first year, people were terrified. I mean, like you mentioned, Mike Tyson was a co-host. You know, we couldn't book guests because we wouldn't have the co-hosts booked far enough in advance. We had to get somebody to give up a whole week. And what would happen is the publicist would see Mike Tyson and go, well, listen, I'm not putting Ashley Judd on a couch that potentially is going to house Mike Tyson, you know. I guess it makes sense from their standpoint, but it was something we never really thought about.
Well, the other thing that we learned was that if you make one guest mad, that guest usually has a publicist that represents about 50 other potential guests, none of whom will now come on the show.
Oh, yes. Yes, and, indeed.
I remember the one time you had the girl from Joe Millionaire on, whatever her name was.
And, there was a girl on Joe Millionaire?
Yeah, it was with one of the girls. She was like in the final two.
Uh-huh.
And we ran a couple mean clips, and you were kind of making fun of her, and she was crying after. And we were like, screw it. You know, who's that girl? Meanwhile, we don't realize, like, she has this PR firm that handles 65 other guests or something. And all those guests would now not come on the show. But anyway, there was a lot of trial error those first year.
It really is. The way late night television is set up is just a nightmare. It really is. You have to be nice to everyone at all times.
Well, then the other weird thing is your show comes on. It's the show that, you know, we spent 2 months working on that. Until about the 18-month mark, didn't even really turn into the show that it looks like now. But you premiere the show, and people watch it one time, and then they judge whether they're going to ever watch the show again by that one time. It's kind of a weird thing, you know?
It's funny, but most of those people are probably not late-night TV viewers in general, so you're probably not going to get them anyway. But I always think, and I think this happened to me last night, is when people come up and go, hey, love the show, and then they go, loved Snoop Dogg, you know. I was like, well, Snoop Dogg hasn't been on since the first week of the show, so thanks for tuning in. But the fact, even that you mentioned Joe Millionaire, I mean, that's when I realized how long the show's been on. It's like, when we've been on so long, Joe Millionaire was popular, like, after we started. Millionaire seems like something that happened in 1991 to me now.
I know, and I remember, like, the second week, the first week, I don't think we really ran that many clips at all, where you would run a funny clip and then.
Well, if you remember, like the first several months of the show, I just go out there. I mean, I had kind of an idea of what I was going to do, but really not. I mean, I was just out there talking, and it's now in retrospect, it's just like it's crazy that we did it like that. There was no plan at all.
But we also had. Probably the worst idea out of all the ideas was to have the staff members as the guest announcers. You'd come out, the nervous staff member was 90% of the time was terrified. And then you'd talk to them for the first 4 minutes, and then you'd do your monologue.
Yeah.
And then all the research comes back, and they were like, that people are 100% against this.
Well, it was just like two out of five of them would be interesting, but we mostly like to do it just to torment members of the staff, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes it'd be interesting. Sometimes you have somebody that was, you know, had something to talk about, but most of the time it was just, oh, this guy in accounting really doesn't want to be on. Let's put him on.
You yeah.
know? Let's force this guy to be on. And I guess me chit-chatting with strangers is not the ideal way to start a late-night talk show.
Well, and we also have to find the balance between how much inside stuff from behind the scenes of the show do you include and how much you don't. Like, we had that thing, your cousin did the staff update. Yeah, that didn't go over well.
Yeah, it was Sal, my cousin Sal is really nuts. I mean, really, even today, what goes on with him. But he'd do staff update where he would just update people on what was going on with the staff. And like the first time, we found out that one of our writers had previously dated this woman who's one of our directors, and the writer was married now and he was pregnant, and Sal made up a story that the director, the woman, was demanding that he convince his wife to have an abortion. There's a bunch of crazy, like, inter-office romance things, and I mean, it was like a flurry of lawsuits were threatened the moment that bit aired, and we decided that even though it was funny, for the good of the future of the show, we weren't going to be able to do staff update anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow we made it out of that first year.
Somehow, and, yeah. I mean, and, the first night on the air, I mean, the craziest thing is our executive producer was on the cover of the New York Times with right. One of our former Juggy dancers from The Man Show on his shoulders. And now this is the day we premiere. He wakes up in the morning and gets a call from his wife because he's at a Super Bowl party. And they took a picture of him, gets a call from his wife going, what the hell is going on out there? She was in New York. And, I mean, it just kind of started from there.
Well, I remember like the fourth show, because we always had the Corolla card. It's like, all right, well, we won't book Corolla, but the first time, you know, a guest calls in sick or maybe something falls out, that's when we'll have him.
Right.
And it was like we had three episodes, and the fourth one, it was like, ah, we can't get any guests. And it's like 2 hours before, and I think the guests were Corolla and the Armenian comedian.
Yeah.
Those were the two guests for episode four, and I remember thinking, oh, my God.
Yeah, like, but still, I mean, really, that's not a bad way to go, you know.
Yeah, that
Adam's always funny. I think people like seeing us together anyway.
Absolutely.
The Armenian comedian, to me, I could do every night fill the show with Armenian comedians. This guy is actually, people can see him on there's a Ding Dong Show page on MySpace where Don Barris is our warm-up guy. He has all these crazy people gathered, and the Armenian comedian is one of the least funny people in the world, Armenian or not. But he thinks he's one of the funniest and most talented people in the world. And he did a ventriloquist act for us. And I think Adam wound up throwing his ventriloquist puppet into a hot vat of hot oil.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think you could call the Armenian comedian one of the least funny, because that still insinuates that he's mildly funny.
He's not mildly funny. He's hilarious. I mean,
well, he's hilarious, but not for the reasons he thinks
exactly.
He's hilarious. Yeah. No, I believe me, that was one of my favorite combos. It was just what scared me was that it was episode four. And we already Corolla
We'd
was
already
like
gone the, to that well, yeah.
Yeah, it was the fire. Corolla was in the fire extinguisher case, waiting to be broken when we desperately needed him. And it was like, ah.
It was
anyway.
Quite a come down from our first show, which was Snoop Dogg as co-host, George Clooney as our lead guest. We flew Warren Sapp in on a helicopter following the Super Bowl, and
yeah.
Coldplay then played on Hollywood Boulevard. And then four nights later, we got
yeah.
Corolla, the Armenian comedian, and a woman who deep fries things.
And then, yeah, and I don't even know if that was the lowest point, because didn't we have...
No, not even close.
I think the worst was when you had that John Edward. What was that guy's name?
Oh, boy, that psychic? Yeah, John Edward.
The psychic who wasn't psychic.
Yeah, he talks to the dead, but he refused to. We booked him for a whole week to be the co-host, and we figured, oh, this would be fun. Like, we had Jim Belushi on. He was going to talk to John Belushi in front of Jim, you know, like, do some, like, weird things. And he's like, oh, no, I can't talk to the dead on the show. Like, well, why not? He's like, it takes too long. And then I just remember thinking, why are you here? And why didn't we ask this question before?
Well, and I remember, for me, the lowest point of the show was the week we had. It was a short week, but we had Monica Lewinsky as the co-host. And
oh,
we were doing
boy,
it,
yeah.
we're doing it for the ratings because it was Monica Lewinsky, but she
wound up getting no ratings out of that because it was like the story was like 11 years old by that time.
Well, and then the other thing is she refused to discuss anything that happened with Clinton.
Yeah, and then I don't know if you remember this, but she
came
into my dressing room one night after the show. We had her ups and downs, and I was not happy with her performance as co-host. And she gave me a present. She gave me a CD, I don't remember what the, or DVD of some movie that everyone has. And then she gave me, she was looking at a bobblehead doll of Tommy Lasorda I had in my office. And she picked it up. She's like, oh, you know who this looks like? And she's like, you know, it actually did look like Bill Clinton at the time. And I was just wishing we could have some of that on the air.
Well, and the best part was the last night we have Luke Perry on, who, you know, for me was a highlight because I'm a big 90210 fan. I actually made, me and Tony made him reenact the scene when his dad's car blows up in the green room. But it's right near the end of the show. And Lewinsky has not mentioned Clinton once. You were not allowed to mention Clinton once. It's right near the end of the guest host week. And just randomly, Luke Perry, who I think had a few in him, starts hitting on Lewinsky and talking about, like, I've always dug you since the Bill Clinton thing. You're a sexy girl. You're naughty. Remember that?
I thought it was the opposite. I thought she was into him.
She was into him, but then he started talking about the Clinton thing. And she was mortified, and you were, like, so delighted that you hadn't brought it up. It didn't come up.
Yeah, it's good. If it's not me, it's not my fault.
Yeah, that was we had some good weeks. I actually, the guest host thing didn't work out, but it's weird because you can remember each week.
I mean, and it did serve a purpose. It kind of got us through a difficult time.
Oh, we also had some good we had some guys that turned out to be bigger stars. Like, we had Patton Oswalt was on for a week. Dane Cook was on for a week.
Yeah. All these guys, people didn't really know. It's kind of cool to see them blossom.
Well, we have we watch football every Sunday at your house. And you have a living room with one giant TV and four smaller ones. 2 years ago, you turned a room off the kitchen into a second viewing room that has four TVs. So you have nine TVs in your house plus two that are kind of high up in the kitchen. So you got, I think, 11 total?
I have 17 total in the house. Don't forget the three I have outside in case people want to watch from the deck.
Yeah.
And the fact that some of these TVs are enormous, too.
Yep. Including there's like one that's like, what, 100 inches?
Yeah, 100-inch projection screen TV.
So you put all those TVs in 2 years ago. Last year, you added a pizza oven.
Yes.
Which was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have in store for the season?
You know what? I've been trying, because I like to up the ante every year with something mm-hmm. special. And it's hard because, I mean, we have the food going, we got the TVs, we got everything. And I was thinking the only thing that I'm toying with right now is some sort of massage situation where I get like some masseuses to come and give us massages while we watch the game. But I have a feeling it's going to wind up causing more trouble than it'll be worth, because when the women get